What do Teddy Roosevelt and Michael Jordan have in common?
The Chicago Bulls pick Michael Jordan of the University of North Carolina.
In 1984, Michael Jordan was selected with the third pick in the NBA draft by the Chicago Bulls. Before that, he had hit the game-winning shot in the national championship for the North Carolina Tar Heels.
The black. The time, 18. Shot, Jordan! Michael Jordan, 14 seconds!
He was the Rookie of the Year in 1985. By 1993, he was a multiple-time All-Star, a gold medalist, a three-time MVP, and a three-time world champion. He was the biggest star basketball had ever seen, or ever has, and he was a cultural icon. Here he is on Oprah.
This is a special day here at the Oprah Winfrey Show. I dressed up because just about the most famous man on the planet is here.
Teddy Roosevelt was a New York State Assemblyman in the 1880s, then the Police Commissioner of New York City by 1895, then the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, then a celebrated war hero as leader of the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War, then governor of New York, then in 1900 he became vice president of the United States under the McKinley administration, until McKinley was assassinated in 1901 and...
Theodore Roosevelt, 26th president of these United States of America, at your service.
As you hear from Robin Williams' portrayal in Night at the Museum, Roosevelt became president of the United States, the youngest before or since, at just 42 years old. As president, he was immensely popular, leading the nation in its progressive era, stopping corruption, and using the power of the federal government. Roosevelt easily won re-election in 1904. Both Michael Jordan and Teddy Roosevelt were unprecedentedly successful in their fields and right in the primes of their careers, yet they both decided to retire.
When I lose the sense of motivation and the sense of to prove something as a basketball player, it's time for me to move away from the game of basketball.
In 1993, Michael Jordan left basketball and eventually went to play minor league baseball.
The star of the day, the world's greatest basketball player, trying to make it in a major league.
At the end of his 1904 to 1908 term, Roosevelt could have run again for president. He hadn't served a full two terms, but he decided to handpick his successor for the Republican Party, William Howard Taft, and go on safari in Africa. But then, within just a few years, both men came out of retirement.
It came in a two-word statement which is now just begging to have a Nike campaign built around it. Quote, unquote, "I'm back." That's all Jordan said on Saturday. That was really all Jordan needed to say as his 17-month retirement came to an end.
Michael Jordan returned to basketball in 1995. By 1912, Roosevelt was back in politics and running for president under the Bull Moose Party. So what's up with coming out of retirement? Because it is not just these two guys. And why do people do it? So first, let's see. Is there a pattern here? Do a lot of people come out of retirement or unretire? Essentially, yes. According to the American Working Conditions Survey, a comprehensive analysis executed by the RAND Corporation, a research organization often employed by the U.S. government, that's RAND for Research and Development, 56% of retirees 50 or older would consider coming out of retirement, and almost 40% of employed workers 65 and older have retired in the past. But there are two groups of people who come out of retirement, those who need to unretire and those who do not. The most obvious person who would come out of retirement is someone who, by any number of unfortunate circumstances, from unexpected health issues to poor retirement saving, does not have enough money to support themselves into retirement without additional wages or salary. This is the first group, those who simply need to come out of retirement. For example, in an article for The Guardian, writer Lizzie Koenig interviews Sue Brown, who had to get a job working in a kitchen after her husband died and she was left with just her small pension. She had only been retired for 3 years. Brown said, I've always thrown myself into work, but now it keeps me alive, too. Since 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic has presented more of these factors that can throw a wrench in a retirement. Many are fearful of an impending financial downturn, for instance. Inflation can also make things challenging. The more intriguing group, and the one we will spend our time discussing, is the second group. Those who come out of retirement but do not need to do so. Our friends Teddy Roosevelt and Michael Jordan from before both fit into this group. A great place to look for other members of this group is pro sports. Sports Illustrated magazine created a list of some of the biggest names in sports who have unretired. Tom Brady, Muhammad Ali, Michael Phelps, Randy Moss, Deion Sanders, tennis, boxing, hockey, there have been a good many star athletes to come out of retirement. But besides celebrity athletes, even the successful career worker who has the money to retire can be found coming out of retirement. In a Wall Street Journal article, "It Isn't Just Tom Brady, More People Are Coming Out of Retirement," reporter Catherine Dill interviews two professionals, Patty Key and Steve Kadelman, who, though they presumably have the funds to retire comfortably, as they both retired around the beginning of the pandemic, have both come out of those retirements already and taken new jobs. They are not alone, as the article says, the share of retired workers re-entering the workforce climbed to around 3% of total retirees in February of 2022. My grandfather has failed at retirement on multiple occasions. We'll come back to that later, though. So who unretires? A whole lot of people, some of which have no choice, but some do. If there are all these people who can easily live out the rest of their days in retirement, then why do they choose to return to their work? In a blog post called "Why Do So Many People Unretire?", retirement counselor Joe Hearn says that when retirees find retirement unfulfilling, this problem can often be traced back to poor planning. Even when people have enough money to retire comfortably, they often do not plan for what they will do during retirement. This is the primary reason people come out of retirement when they do not need to, and the history behind retirement in America, as well as a bit of behavioral psychology, can allow us to understand why it happens so frequently. For most of American history, retirement was simply not a viable goal for the vast majority of Americans. People conventionally worked for as long as they could to provide for themselves and their families. In the late 1800s, typically about 75% of men 65 and older participated in the workforce. It was like that until the biggest financial crisis in American history struck. In 1933, in the midst of the Great Depression, Dr. Francis Townsend, a doctor and public health officer, proposed a plan to provide regular income to Americans over the age of 60. And he garnered public support with millions of supporters and thousands of Townsend clubs across the nation. The movement pushed President Roosevelt to create institutions expressly to aid retirement.
Social Security is the president's theme as in Washington he discusses the outlook of the individual.
The millions of today want and have a right to the same security that their forefathers sought in this nation. The assurance that with health and the willingness to work, they will find a place for themselves in the social and economic system of the time. Because it has become increasingly difficult for individuals to build their own security single-handed, government must now step in and help them lay the foundation stones, just as government in the past has helped lay the foundation of business and industry.
Social Security was rolled out during the Second New Deal, giving many Americans some guaranteed income for their futures. According to An Economic History of Retirement by Professor of Economics Joanna Short at Augustana College, Social Security benefits were increased in the following decades, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Also according to Short, as World War II heated up, firms started offering private pensions to attract employees in a tight labor market. And in combination with the prosperity of the 1950s, private pensions became commonplace. According to Short, from 1940 to 1960, the number of people covered by private pensions increased from 3.7 million to 23 million, or to nearly 30% of the labor force. After that, with the decline of the economy in the 70s, and then the move towards independent contribution plans like 401ks and IRAs gaining popularity, the accessibility of retirement has since declined. But that's a topic for a different time. The developments of Social Security and pensions led to a whole new generation of Americans who had enough money for retirement to live out their later years without having to work.
When I retired, my first project was to do absolutely nothing, slowly. I was at peace with the world was at peace with me. It was like being a boy again, and a whole new world was before me. I felt great.
With many more people retiring, a whole retirement industry appeared, and America's concept of what it meant to retire was totally altered. As the episode of Netflix and Vox's mini-documentary series, Money Explained, on retirement says,
retirement as an idea had only really existed for a few decades when it got a new brand as a second childhood, a time of leisure.
Retirement communities sprung up across the nation, like the first, Sun City, in Youngstown, Arizona, a resort-like place with a swimming pool, golf courses, and activities. In fact, the previous clip was from a weirdly lengthy Sun City advertisement where a man retires from his career job and struggles with feeling fulfilled in retirement, only to find Sun City. Here's later in the ad depicting the despair of boredom in retirement.
This is retirement. Time on your hands. With no place to go. Nothing to do. This is what it means to be put out to pasture.
And here's when the commercial finally mentions what it's advertising after 10 minutes of runtime.
Sun City, an active new way of life. Golf course, activity center, community center, recreation park, swimming pool, highway house, shopping center. It's like a resort.
When Americans think of retirement, we think golf, sun tanning by the poolside, because of the branding these retirement communities put out during this time. Essentially, Americans have been taught that retirement is a time of play or doing nothing at all. This association is one reason retirees do not plan for what they will fill their time doing after retiring, and thus have a hard time staying in retirement. It is not only broad economic trends over the decades and marketing tactics that cause a lack of planning in retirement. There's also some human psychology at play. It turns out that short-sightedness about our futures is an intrinsically human fault psychologically. Hal Hirschfield, professor of marketing, behavioral decision-making, and psychology at the Anderson School of Management at UCLA, has done a lot of work on our perceptions of our future selves. On his website, there are about 15 research papers tagged under the label Considering the Future Self. Particularly, he does a lot of research on the other side of retirement, financial savings. Hirschfield refers to the phenomenon called temporal discounting, or as he puts it in his 2009 paper, Saving for the Future Self, Neural Measures of Future Self-Continuity Predict Temporal Discounting, people often care less about future outcomes than they do about present ones. In that 2009 paper, Hirschfield presented a novel way of researching how people think about their future selves. Hirschfield ran a study in which he scanned the brain activity of test subjects and asked them to think about their current self, then a stranger, then a stranger in the future, then themselves in the future. He found that the subject's brain activity was high when thinking about their current selves, but when thinking about themselves in the future, their brain activity was similarly low to when thinking about a stranger. As he explains on that same episode of Money Explained,
psychologically, people don't identify with who they'll be in the distant future. That future person seems like a stranger to them, almost.
That is why some have such a hard time saving for retirement, but it is also why people have a hard time planning for what they'll do in retirement. Evidently, humans are not wired to plan for the future, and therefore not always wired to have successful retirements. There are two more factors that can cause someone who is financially fit for a long retirement to come out of retirement instead. These are more of my speculation on the dynamics at play with unretirement. Let's call the first the worker's gonna work factor. Usually, from the beginning of adulthood until retirement, the majority of one's lifetime is spent working. To become very successful, like a pro athlete or corporate higher-up, at least theoretically, one has to work even harder than the average over this long period. Thus, when these people, who are quite financially healthy, go into retirement, it can be extremely difficult to just quit working cold turkey. They are used to the process of work. It has been the object of their life until that point. The aforementioned Mr. Kadelman, who came out of retirement this year, exemplified the worker's gonna work factor and the American country club perception of retirement when he said, "Wheeling and dealing was in my blood. Not working, it felt wrong. I'm not a good golfer." Let's call the second factor the letting go factor. The struggle of giving up control and watching others take the role the retiree previously held. Let's imagine a scenario, one that may or may not be based on my grandfather. An accountant seeks to sell his business to another younger accountant and retire. They come to an agreement and start transferring the clients to the younger accountant. But then, the older accountant starts to feel unsatisfied with how the new accountant deals with his clients. He believes the new guy cannot deal with his clients as effectively as he did and wishes to come out of retirement to take back his old role. He may be right, but it still shows how hard it can be for retirees to let go of their old posts. The letting go factor was prominent in Teddy Roosevelt's unretirement. Remember at the beginning, I said that Roosevelt handpicked his successor, William Howard Taft, to be president starting in 1908. Well, it turns out Taft was not the politician Teddy had thought he was. In an article about Roosevelt running for election in 1912, his effective unretirement, adjunct assistant professor of political science at George Mason University, Andrew Pavard, writes, "The long series of personal, political, and ideological differences between Taft and Roosevelt emerged from the moment Taft accepted the 1908 Republican nomination." With a less than optimal president directly replacing him, Roosevelt had a tough time letting go. In October 1911, during Taft's administration, 3 years into Roosevelt's retirement, when Taft contradicted a political move that Roosevelt had executed during his presidency, Roosevelt wrote an article called "The Trusts, the People, and the Square Deal." According to Pavard, the article also contained a scathing denunciation of the Taft administration's antitrust policy, the major political issue of the day. Roosevelt historian George Mowry argues that it was this anger at Taft that caused Roosevelt to unretire and run for president again in 1912. Because of the modern developments playing into unretirement, like the aforementioned retirement trends throughout the 20th century, as well as the peculiarities of the job of President of the United States, Roosevelt does not embody all the markations of unretirement that we have discussed. But if we check back on Michael Jordan, we can see how he exemplifies nearly all of the reasons people come out of retirement when they do not need to. When Jordan retired in October 1993, it was in the wake of the murder of his father and immense media attention, some surrounding Jordan's gambling habits. So his decision to retire was abrupt. While he had millions of dollars to support himself in retirement, he, like so many who fail at retirement, did not plan for what he would do with his time during retirement. Jordan was an avid golfer. Here he is playing golf the day before he would score 63 points in the playoffs against the Celtics.
I cannot hit it today.
Jordan was likely impacted by the general American perception of retirement, the perception caused by a wave of young retirees during the 20th century that spurred an entire retirement industry, a perception of recreation, golf, and swimming pools. This subliminal notion of retirement, along with Jordan's very human inability to consider his future self, probably made him think he would be content spending his time on the green and with his family, and so he did not make other plans. In an interview he gave in 1995 about coming out of retirement, Jordan said,
"My life has always been, and my motto has always been to live it day by day, you know, and not try to think so far in advance that you kind of forget about the present."
Clearly, Jordan was not the planning type in the first place. By March 1994, Jordan was playing minor league baseball to pass the time. Since he was a teenager, Jordan had worked tirelessly, day in, day out, to achieve basketball greatness. Left without that habit of work in retirement, he had to replace his old job, his basketball career, with another whole pro athletic career. Worker's gonna work. In 1993, Michael Jordan's last season before retirement, the Chicago Bulls were second in the Eastern Conference and they won the championship for the third straight year. By the second year of Jordan's retirement in 1995, the Bulls were fifth in the Eastern Conference and they had lost in the second round of the playoffs the year before. That is quite a drop-off. Perhaps Jordan, the ultra-competitive player he was, saw his team floundering without him and wanted to get back in on the action. Jordan had trouble letting go. All of these reasons that we have discussed, compounded on top of each other, led Jordan to unretire and rejoin the Bulls in March 1995. And they are the same reasons that lead many unretirees into their failed retirements.